It's time to change the situation if Tottenham wants to change.
It's in the past, it's in the past. Then we look forward, buy our football positive. We're wearing Tottenham shirts, we play the Tottenham way.
And still Ricky Villa! What a fantastic run! He scored!
That's going to have a crack. He is, you know.
Well, welcome back to the Tottenham Way podcast. After a quite extraordinary Sunday, what a performance, what a win at Old Trafford. A fourth successive victory for Spurs in all competitions. I know the media are fixating on Manchester United and why they were so bad. And yes, they were pretty bad. But we are going to dive deep into why Spurs were so good. I'm Marcus Buckland. Dan Kilpatrick of The Standard is alongside me. Good morning, Dan. Where would you place that performance under Big Ange? I think I am tempted to say it's the best so far.
Morning, Marcus. Yeah, I think there's definitely a case it's the best so far. I mean, it's always felt like those first kind of 10 games of last season are almost a separate period in isolation, aren't they? This kind of honeymoon period that we look back on that's felt pretty separate to everything that's kind of come after that. That's been a lot more kind of up, down, a lot less consistent, a lot kind of harder, but a lot of good things in there. But that was a really kind of unique and special run. So putting aside the first 10 games of last season, I think it probably is the best performance under Ange, maybe along with that second half at Villa. Was it back in March? The 4-0 win at Villa Park, which felt like it might be a watershed, but obviously kind of wasn't. But yeah, it was really impressive. And as you said, the narrative today is going to be about how much of a shambles United are, and a lot of the media attention is going to be there. And I think in a way, that's a shame, that there's definitely something to that. United were a rabble, but I think they were made to look really poor by a really impressive Spurs performance, a really kind of unique showing, really, that, you know, the way Spurs play, just going at United from the first minute with those two number eights and Maddison and Kulusevski, who I thought were outstanding, playing with purpose, playing with intensity, playing with zip. And let's face it, you know, really underscoring, given the openings and chances they had, United will point to the red card, but long before Fernandes was sent off, Spurs should have been clear in that game. And we'll come on to this, I'm sure, but yeah, if Son was playing, I'm sure it would have been a bigger score as well. So, yeah, a really good afternoon for Spurs, and one that kind of makes me feel like, you know, everything Postecoglou's been saying and talking about is starting to kind of come up to the boil quite nicely. You know, they're finding a rhythm. They're finding their finishing boots in the final third, which has been a big problem. They're keeping clean sheets. And I should just say to finish off that the first away win against a big six rival, which feels significant. And then the first kind of big away win again since Villa.
Yeah, I mean, Villa 6.5 months ago, that was a fantastic performance, and we have been waiting for something similar. We certainly got it. There are those of you who would suggest that I could be a little bit negative at times. And watching the game yesterday, first 10 minutes, I'm thinking, this is great, this is fantastic, and we've scored a goal. But can we keep it going, and can we convert some more chances? Well, we certainly kept it going throughout, which was fantastic. If you're going to be ultra critical, and you just touched upon it, yeah, they should have had 4, 5 or even 6 by the end. But it was just, for me, Dan, that the link-up play throughout the 90 minutes, there was that defensive solidity as well. You mentioned it was another clean sheet. And of course, the way Spurs play with the high line, there are going to be opportunities. Rashford got in on one occasion, Garnacho hit the outside of the post. But of course, we're going to give the odd chance to the opposition. But there was nothing more than that. The link-up play was just so smooth throughout. The turnovers as well. I haven't got the stats in front of me, but Tottenham's pressing, Dan, has become a really notable feature of the way they've been playing. And I am the first to hold up my hands. I was questioning Postecoglou, particularly before and after the Coventry game. But I really feel as though something has clicked. And again, you're right. If Sonny had been playing instead of Timo Werner, who knows what might have happened. But we have to believe now that anything is possible. Equally, I don't want to get too carried away, Dan, but who in particular caught your eye yesterday? You've mentioned that performance from several of the midfielders in particular.
Yeah, it was the two number eights that really caught my eye, Maddison and Kulusevski. I thought they were just outstanding. And I'll admit, before the game, when I saw Werner in the lineup, I did wonder whether Postecoglou could have pushed Kulusevski into the front three and then brought Saar or even Bissouma into the midfield. I thought Saar played very well against Karabag midweek, and that might have been a kind of safer call given how poor Werner was against Coventry. But I think I totally understand now why he didn't want to move Kulusevski out of the number eight role. I thought he was just absolutely brilliant. And there are, you know, lots of stats doing the round on social media today about the number of chances he created. I think it was 9 chances created in total, which is more than anyone at Old Trafford this season, including all the United players, which is quite incredible. And I don't think anyone has created that many chances in a league game at Old Trafford since Premier League records began. So a genuinely kind of landmark performance from Kulusevski. I can't believe he didn't have an assist. He put Werner clean through twice. He shot at Onana twice, as we know. He passed the ball for Johnson for that effort, which hit the base of the post and created many more chances besides. Took his goal really, really well. Kind of deflected cross. He had to adjust his body in a kind of really nice, deft, flicked finish past Onana. So, you know, he was just brilliant. And I think Tom Allnutt touched on it last week, but we talked last season about Ange not adapting or changing things and kind of doing the same thing every week. But moving Kulusevski permanently into midfield has been a masterstroke, really, and it's definitely elevated Spurs a level. He looks so much happier and more of a threat in there. He's just less predictable. And I think when he's playing on the wing, you kind of know he's going to come inside on his left foot 9 times out of 10. So he was brilliant. And Maddison as well, I thought was great. Lee Carsley was there watching. Wouldn't be surprised if Maddison was back in the England squad next week. Or in fact, this week, I think the squad's named on Thursday. He was really, really good, just full of kind of zip on the ball. You know when Maddison's confident because he tries all these kind of audacious outside of the boot passes with his right foot, doesn't he? And he even took a free kick that way, just kind of whacking it with his kind of outstep into the channel. Pressing again from both of them, as you touched on, off the ball was brilliant. And Man United couldn't live with that from the first kind of 3 minutes when Van de Ven just charged through them and they all just kind of melted away as he came forward. Johnson makes a run to the back post. Diallo just gives up tracking him. The difference between the sides off the ball was remarkable, really. And I think off the ball, Spurs have been pretty good for a while. I mean, in the Arsenal game, there were lots of kind of turnovers high up the pitch, but the thing they were missing was that sharpness, that clinical edge in the final third, that kind of confidence to have a shot or make the last pass. And that's come in the last 4 games. You know, they suddenly look like a side, and it's exemplified by Johnson, really, who, you know, who are happy to just get the ball out of their feet and have a go. And that was missing against Arsenal and probably Newcastle and Leicester as well. And we're seeing that now, and it's making a huge difference.
Yeah, and Ange said afterwards, actually, that in terms of all the performances this season, Spurs have never been outplayed. I feel like the only time that they have really lost their way, I'm going to ignore the Coventry game, but, you know, the period after they went behind to Arsenal, there was a little bit of desperation about the performance. Aside from that, we lost at Newcastle and should have won, should have beaten Leicester, got the home wins against both Everton and Brentford. So when you look back now, you're thinking, yeah, all that doom and gloom, what was it all about? And for me, it all comes down. I'm not going to mention that competition. I don't care. It's gone. It's gone. The guy is an absolute genius. The only, you know, frustration really, Dan, was the performance of Timo Werner. I mean, I'm sure that every single Spurs player, to a man and to a woman and to a boy and to a girl, knew when he was put through in the first half and again in the second, he was not going to score. And I just wonder what the problem is, because some of his touches and his bursts of pace, he was doing things that, to be fair, Sonny wouldn't have been able to do at the age of 32. He was creating those openings and then he pulls the ball back in the wrong place, and when he gets a chance to shoot, he's got, well, no confidence. Does it just come down to a lack of confidence? Is there a technical failing in the way he finishes? It's so frustrating.
Well, I think he's always been a bad finisher, right? I mean, this was the issue at Chelsea. He wasn't not getting in positions. He was just not finishing off good positions. And that's really what it came down to there. I think you could see when he went clean through the first time that he got kind of caught in two minds about which corner to go for. It looked like he wanted to open up his body and kind of bend it into the far corner. Then it almost felt like he did neither. He just kind of rolled it down the middle straight at Onana. But look, I'll give a positive spin on Werner's performance as well, because I did think, as you said, his touch was great. He got the ball out of his feet really well several times. I thought his first touch was really smart and gave Spurs an outlet all the time. So actually, there's a kind of case. Take away the two missed one-on-ones, and let's give him credit for getting in those positions in the first place. But take them away, and I thought it was a good performance, a kind of selfless performance in the system, giving Spurs an outlet, giving Spurs width down the left, giving Spurs a threat in behind. So I didn't think it was dreadful, but yeah, obviously you want your forward scoring goals. I guess the thing to say about Werner is that in the second half of last season, it really felt like he was one of the first kind of names on the team sheet, or at least a kind of regular starter most weeks. Now we're in a position where Spurs have three forwards injured, Son, Odegaard and Richarlison, and he's getting in the team. And probably if any of those other forwards were fit, you know, there's a good chance Werner wouldn't be in the side. So that does show that Spurs have improved their depth in those forward areas. You know, Werner is not an automatic starter. And I think, you know, we were saying on the pod many times last season that that's probably the way it kind of should be for a player of his level, but his kind of flaws as well.
Yeah, I would certainly concur with that. And I still feel that he will have a role to play, particularly in the Europa League. And if you're right. I mean, his whole career has been played by an inability to finish things off. So even if he was to score next week, it doesn't mean the floodgates are going to open. But he has got something. I like the guy. I really, really want him to score a couple of goals and to have that belief, because he must have wished the ground could swallow him at one point yesterday. On a more positive note, and you've touched upon it, but the assist for the first goal from Mickey van der Ven, for me, is right up there. We all know, I mean, it doesn't come as a massive surprise because we all know how quick he is, but that final touch that he played before crossing the ball, even I was going, Mickey, you're not that quick. And yet he got there so comfortably, whips the ball across. We know that Brennan Johnson was smiling before he even put it into the back of the net, because, you know, it was even I would have finished that one off. You might have done, Dan. I'm not sure. I've seen you play a few times. You might still have somehow skewed it wide. But it was absolutely amazing. I cannot think of a better assist in recent times. And the way he played throughout, again, he is the ultimate Rolls Royce. I always worry that something's going to happen to his hamstring. But honestly, Dan, the guy is sensational, isn't he? And he and Romero at the back, I mean, I just think it's such a fantastic pairing.
Yeah, you say you can't remember a better assist, but the one against Everton was maybe better. I don't know. It's twice now he's done that this season already, which is incredible, really, kind of run from deep inside his own half. I think this one was probably a bit better than Everton. But what strikes me about both those assists is that it's not just that he's able to carry the ball those ridiculous distances at that speed, which I don't think any other centre-half in the world could do. It's that when he gets there, he always seems to make a great decision and produce a great final ball. We talked on the post-Everton pod about whether he might have had a shot in that position. You know, he got to the edge of the box and it was kind of opening up ahead of him, but he made the right call. He played in Son, and Son scored the fourth goal, I think. That was a great call and a nice pass. And as you said yesterday, he got to the edge of the box again. His penultimate touch, you thought he might have overrun it, but it kind of hung up on the grass really nicely for him. And the final ball was perfect. It was brilliant. You know, it would have been easy there to kind of underhit the cross or hit it behind Johnson or whatever. But he drilled it perfectly across the face of the box. And yeah, as you said, it was the easiest possible finish to Johnson, who kind of showed great desire to get there, far more desire than Dalot, who just kind of gave up and threw his hands up in the air, apologising immediately. Mm. Which kind of summed up United's application off the ball.
Well, it did.
But yeah, I mean,
The whole move, I was going to say, summed up Manchester United's lack of application from the moment that Van de Ven intercepted in front of Rashford. I mean, it was from a United point of view, and we will come on to them in a moment. It was really embarrassing. But yeah, he was amazing. Of course, Johnson's now got 4-4. Dominic Solanke's got 3-3. And that was a typical striker's finish from him. So, you know, how encouraged are you? I remember you quite rightly saying when he got injured at the start of the season and Spurs were clearly missing him at Newcastle in particular, he's come back in and you can argue that his three goals were, you know, goals that you should put away, but he's getting into the right positions. They've all been, you know, centre forwards finishes. So has he exceeded your expectations in terms of the way that he has settled into this system of playing?
Sorry, Solanke or Johnson?
Yes, no, Solanke.
Solanke. Yeah, I mean, Ange made a quip afterwards. I asked him about the coming together in the final third, and he said Solanke's got over his 180 minutes crisis of confidence, which I think was alluding to the fact that he went two games without a goal, and we were already kind of wondering if he was a problem, which seems slightly silly now. But yeah, look, he scored in all three games this week. I think good management from Postecoglou for kind of keeping him in against Carabag. I think he sensed that, you know, he could go on a little run. He was fit enough to play all those three games in a row, so kind of why not? And yeah, you know, he's doing exactly what Spurs bought him to do, to be the kind of penalty box finisher. I think, you know, we said when he signed, or I said certainly, and I think I was doing a pod with Tom B, that I can't really remember any of Solanke's goals at Bournemouth last season, but I know he scored a lot of them. Because I think what he does really well is, you know, he gives you a presence in the box and he finishes things off well enough if you create chances for him. And that's kind of what we've seen this week. The goals against, no, all three goals really, just pieces of smart opportunism in the box, you know, reacting quickest to a loose ball, basically. And Spurs have missed that ever since they sold Harry Kane, really. So yeah, he's doing the job. He's doing what he signed for. I've no doubt he's, you know, going to get better and more confident. And I think just, again, his work off the ball in kind of leading that press for Spurs is so important. I mean, look, he's going to get a lot of unfair comparisons to Harry Kane, but, you know, the one thing that Kane wouldn't be able to do would be to run for 90 minutes or 85 minutes, whatever it is, in the same way that Solanke does. So, you know, he is a real, he's a real kind of driving force out of possession for Spurs up there. And again, talking of the England squad, it'll be interesting to see if he gets a call up this week.
Yeah, well, hopefully. I mean, it's certainly looking really good. I mean, we just ticked every box. I mentioned the two fullbacks who did a terrific job. I thought when Jed Spence came on, you know, he's growing in assurance. What a fantastic asset he is going to be. Bentancur, I do, you know, I know we spoke about Bentancur last week. He's going to get a ban. He deserves to get the ban. I hope it's not too lengthy. I think he's learnt from what he said, and he's becoming such an important player again. And, you know, you go back and you're thinking Bentancur and Kulusevski, when they came midway through, what was it, two seasons ago, what a fantastic bit of business that was by the club. We know that sometimes, you know, signing players in the January transfer window is not easy, but they have been two absolutely stellar signings. So everything is looking rosy. A word about Manchester United, Dan. I know this is a Spurs podcast. They were awful. Do you think Ten Hag is going to pay the price for that performance yesterday? Can he survive? I know they've got games away at Porto and then Aston Villa over the next few days.
It's kind of hard to see him surviving much longer, isn't it? But I think, Philip, we've said that before. I mean, a lot of people in the press room last night, a lot of the Man United reporters were sort of saying they felt like that was the nadir. But it seems to me, kind of very much from the outside looking in, that they've had quite a few results like that. And actually, as we said, it came against a really impressive Spurs side. So I'm not sure how much worse it was than the 3-0 defeat to Liverpool last time, for instance, or kind of any of their other humiliations under Ten Hag. But yeah, they just, I've said it before, but they kind of remind me a bit of Conte's Spurs. You know, you watch them every week and you just think, what have they been doing on the training ground? They just don't look like they've got a plan or an identity. They are capable of winning games and scoring goals occasionally because they've got fantastic players, you know, 60, 70 million pound players in their team. And those players you know, will occasionally bail you out and will be able to play kind of quite smartly in transition sometimes. And we saw a bit of that from United last night. You know, they had a little, you know, it's barely worth calling a rally, but a little spell in the first half. And then obviously they had a bit of a push at 2-0 in the second half. But again, sort of credit to Spurs for not kind of collapsing or conceding as they have done on occasion in the past. You know, I thought they defended pretty solidly, and Vicario only had one big save to make, I think, from Xerxes at 1-0 when he got down low. So, yeah, I mean, look, United are a rabble. I think Ten Hag will probably go sooner rather than later. I think the ownership also deserves a big share of the blame. I mean, everyone knew they were minded to sack him before the FA Cup final. They had historically poor performances in the league and Champions League last season. There was no real evidence that he was up to the job, but they managed to pull off a shot win against City. And again, that can happen when you've got really good players. You can pull off one-off results with a one-off game plan, but it doesn't point to kind of long-term progress. And they kept him on, and not only did they keep him on, they backed him to make more really expensive signings of Dutch players, basically, yeah. You know, who he knows. And now they're probably going to have to sack him and bring in a new manager who might not want those players. So, yeah, their season isn't beyond salvaging for sure, but it's looking pretty desperate for them already.
Yeah, it is. And he must hate playing against Spurs because, of course, he was the Ajax manager when we beat them in the semi-finals of the Champions League. We've had, I mean, last season at home, I thought we were brilliant against them as well. And we got a good point at Old Trafford at the start of this year too. Just quickly also on the United front, and it didn't make any difference because actually United were probably better with 10 men than 11. But, and I'm not saying this with the benefit of hindsight, but even it took one replay, but I didn't feel as though Fernandes should have been sent off, and even James Maddison looked to be saying to him that wasn't a red card. So I don't know why VAR didn't at least persuade the referee to go and have another look at that one, Dan.
I guess it was deemed reckless play and dangerous play. I think there is an emphasis this season from referees to kind of stick more the umpire's call, or the referee's call rather. So, you know, there's kind of an emphasis on VAR as being less sort of interventionalist. Is that a word? It might be a word.
Sort of.
Yeah. There's emphasis on the VAR kind of getting involved less, I think. So as soon as I looked at that, I thought that's not a red card for me. That's a yellow or maybe an orange, and we should give them the benefit of the doubt. But I didn't think the VAR was ever going to advise the referee to do anything different. I think from Fernandes' point of view, he's kind of slipped, hasn't he? And he sort of overcompensates. But you know, I do think, as other people have pointed out, the fact that Maddison and Kulusevski were just running the game and doing what presumably Fernandes wanted to be doing, you know, getting on the board, dictating the play, must have been frustrating for him. And there was probably an element of frustration and indiscipline in what he did. And I think United lost discipline pretty quickly, and that was another kind of worrying sign for Ten Hag. You saw Mount kind of come off the bench and within seconds of the second half just go right through the back of Bentancur completely needlessly and get booked. And then he's under pressure. He's up against Maddison, Kulusevski and Bentancur and having to watch himself. And that was another example of United just kind of failing to play with any kind of real control.
Mm. Yeah, it was just a relentless tide of white shirts going forward. I had to keep pinching myself. You know, the first 5 or 6 minutes, we were brilliant. And, you know, we have seen that before. And I kept thinking, well, this can't last, can it? And it did. And it's just, you know, fair play to Big Ange. He did say that when we get things right, we are going to be glorious. And they certainly were glorious at Old Trafford. Now, just in terms of selection policy, Dan, looking ahead to this week, it's busy, of course. Thank God we've got Europe again. But it does present issues. An away game at Ferencváros on Thursday night. And then what should be, on paper at least, a fantastic game to watch at Brighton on Sunday. Certainly if they play like they did against Chelsea at the weekend, there should be plenty of goals in that. What's your hunch as to what Ange is going to do in selection terms? And do you know the extent of Sonny's injury?
Ange said last night he didn't know the extent of Sonny's injury, or he was coy about it. He wasn't giving anything away. He just said, we'll see. I mean, I think it's another tricky balancing act for Ange, because obviously he will want to maintain this momentum. He will now feel that Spurs have a really good rhythm and a really good momentum for wins on the bounce. You know, he'll obviously want that to be six going into the international break. Spurs have kind of made a habit of sort of losing badly on this cusp of the international break. It's happened a few times, obviously Arsenal being another one, and it's not what you want. It kind of, you know, puts a bit of a cloud over the club for the 2 weeks. I mean, it's a tricky one. You mentioned Van de Ven's hamstrings. I mean, for instance, I'm sure he's a player who Ange would love to give a rest to on Thursday, but then Dragosin's suspended, isn't he, for that game? So that, you know, that's a complication. Already, Udogi came off at half time last night after pulling up in the first half. It looked like he was going to go off immediately, but he played on. And so you'd imagine he needs a rest. And again, that was a kind of consequence of Dragosin being sent off and him, you know, having to play Thursday nearly a full game after being initially on the bench. So, it, you know, there's a lot of big calls. Solanke's another one. You'd imagine he'd like to rest now, but then there's no Richarlison or potentially no Son and no Odegaard. So a lot of big calls. I guess the important thing is that Spurs have got 3 points on the board in the Europa League already. We've said it a million times already on this podcast, but that's a competition where you can, you know, afford to drop points and then you have chances to make it up. So if it's a kind of more weakened team against the Hungarians, then so be it. I think kind of Brighton, as you said, are a really interesting team. Spurs had a bad defeat there last season. Was it 4-2?
It was 4-2, but it was 4-0 at one stage in that game. And actually yeah. Spurs, we could have come back and got something out of that game. It was extraordinary.
Yeah, I remember. So yeah, they've got a new manager, but they're such an interesting, exciting team. So that's a big game.
Yeah, I think there's a very strong argument this week in particular to say, okay, of course we want to do well in Europe, but for the reasons you've just said, if we did drop a couple of points or even lose, I feel as though Brighton's much the more important game ahead of the international break. But obviously, we want to fire on all cylinders. Just a question about, you know, blooding the youngsters. I did say yesterday, before I even knew whether Sonny was going to play, that if he was out, I hoped that Mikey Moore might be given a start ahead of Werner. And a lot of people said to me, there's absolutely no chance of that happening. But he came on and he had an opportunity. He looked sharp straight away. So is it time perhaps for one of the youngsters to be thrown in from the start of a game?
Well, I think we're heading towards Mikey Moore's first start, slowly but surely. He had probably his longest appearance or his longest cameo, I would have thought, last night. He played at least 15 minutes plus stoppages, I think. And a couple of really nice runs down the wing, occupying United's players. And that shot near the end that wasn't too far away from the far post. So, you know, he looks like he can more than hold his own, certainly in the Premier League. And you know, you'd assume, therefore, in the Europa League, he'll be okay as well. So, yeah, I mean, he could be one that starts on Thursday. I don't know whether Ange is kind of minded to be a little bit cautious with him. But the fact is, Spurs are really short of forwards at the moment. And I don't think we're expecting Odegaard back till after the international break. Richarlison, Ange just said, stop asking me about him. So that, you know, that isn't a great sign. Sort of suggests it might be a niggly one that's going to go on for a while again. And then Son, we're not really sure. I could well imagine that Spurs want to be careful with Son and perhaps give him the international break to recover if he has got a muscle strain or a tight muscle. So, you know, we could be looking at a week where there's sort of four forwards on the, you know, in rotation, one of them is Mikey Moore, in which case you'd think he would have to start one game. But yeah, I mean, in terms of the other youngsters, we're going to see Graham Bovell starting, aren't we? We kind of know that. I think they're absolute bankers in the Europa League. Lancashire's kind of edging closer to a sub appearance, I think. So there's sort of plenty of reason to be excited.
Yeah, and Dan, I'm going to make one other outrageous prediction. Timo Werner will score on Thursday, and that will open the floodgates. And, he'll get at least one more between then and the end of the season. But I think we all wish him. I mean, there are those who go, oh, don't let him start. He's so willing. And I've said it before, he's got this really likeable face, which is ridiculous, I know, but I just want Timo to play his part. One last thing we should mention, Dan, the homophobic chanting at Old Trafford yesterday. I was only watching on television. It didn't come across on the TV, but clearly it was very audible inside the ground. And Tottenham have issued a statement to say that they'll look into it. They will try and identify those responsible. I mean, there isn't much to say about this other than the fact that, you know, it's 2024. It's unacceptable. And I am sure that appropriate action will be taken.
Yeah, I suppose I've strongly condemned it in a statement since the game. I heard it, to be honest, quite clearly. It's not what you want to hear. It's a kind of shame, and it is the shame that it mars, a great afternoon for the club to an extent. And also, I thought, you know, the fans in general were brilliant yesterday and kind of enjoyed themselves. So again, it's a shame. It kind of detracts slightly from that.
Yeah, it was the only negative after a scintillating 90 minutes. And let us hope that this is the start of the glorious chapter to which Ange referred. Danny Boy, thank you very much indeed. Dan Kilpatrick of The Standard. So Europe on Thursday, Brighton away on Sunday. We'll be back later in the week. It'll be an interesting selection dilemma, if that's the right word for Big Ange, but we've got players in the squad. Obviously, he'll be a little bit ham-fisted by the European squad that he had to select, which means, for example, that Jed Spence won't be able to play on Thursday night. But whoever he plays, hopefully they can produce another scintillating performance. I am Marcus Buckland. Come on, you Spurs.